This is the SNL Friday Night Spectrum Meeting held at El Paseo Shopping Centre, Room 120 in San Jose, California, on September 16, 1994. Tonight's 15-minute speaker is Bobby A. of San Jose. The one-hour speaker is Dan R. of San Jose. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speaker or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
I'm Bobby, I'm an alcoholic. And, I'd like to say it's an honor to be here, especially tonight because the main speaker is my sponsor, and so it's kind of special. It's kind of cool, you know. There's a little mix-up right in the beginning, but thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Jeff. You know, there's two things happening, but I'd say that I gotta tell you, I was doomed. I was destined for this program. My family, I'll tell you a little bit about them because it's a big part of it. My father and my mother, my father got sober, he's got like 26 years, and my mom has 26 years in Al-Anon, okay? So that made it really hard to drink and use, you know? This is, I'll even give you some more history, okay? I grew up in a house that Al Easthouse built. My next door neighbor, their next door neighbor at the time where I lived was Jack Holt. I mean, it was, and Jack Holt's my dad's sponsor, and it's like, I was destined to be here, you know what I'm saying? It was like, there's no escape, you know? What happened was, is I'll get right into it, is that, you know, when I drank, there was only one reason when I drank. There was only one goal, and that was to get as drunk and as loaded as I could get. You know, even the first time that I tried, I was like in eighth grade, and I got sick, I turned as white as the wall, and I swore to God I would never drink again. That was it, you know. And what happened was, I was growing up a little bit more, and in high school, I saw that, you know, growing up, I never felt good. I never felt like I was enough. I never felt like I fit in. So in the beginning, I used sports. And I'd get, you know, like acknowledgement from being really good at the sport that I did. And and what happened was, is that worked for a while, but then when I got to high school, and you all know what high school's like, it sucks. Growing up, I mean, going through puberty, that whole thing sucks, you know. I never want to do it again, you know. Thank God we don't. But what happened for me is that I saw the people that had what I wanted at that time. The guys I looked at were the guys that had the type of girl that I liked, that they were always drinking. They were always drinking, or they were always high. On drugs. But what happened was, I tried again and it worked. You know, there was I forgot to mention that my father and my mother got divorced when I was like 5 years old. And I don't blame my alcoholism on my mother or my father. I was the one that was drinking, you know. I was the one that was putting all the drugs in my body, you know. That's for me, you know. But what happened was, is that I think growing up, I always felt, you know, that part of me really wanted to be accepted by people, and I had that hole in my gut, you know, and I had no God in my life. And if there was a God, he didn't care about me, because why am I feeling this way? Why can't I fit in? Why can't I be like other people? And that's when the drugs and alcohol, that's when they made me feel like I was part of, you know, I could hang. I was cool. You know, I finally found a place where I wanted to be. And like y'all know, it took a turn. You know, I no longer could drink, or I could no longer take drugs without getting busted by somebody, whether it be a girlfriend, whether it be my family or my friends. You know, they didn't. You know, I wasn't cool. It was no longer a party. You know, I ended up at the age of 18. I tried this program. What I led in the beginning about Jack Holt, my dad, and everything like that is, it ties into my first time getting clean. My mom, I came in one night from, I did drugs, that's part of my story, and a lot of people did, I won't go into it, but that was part of my, you know. I came in off a run, and It was like 6 a.m. in the morning, and I told my mom that, you know what, I'm going to bed. She woke up. I tried sneaking in the door. It didn't work. You know, I was loud as, you know. Thought I was quiet, but it was loud. She told me I had two options, either go see a counselor or get out of the house. And I couldn't hang on the streets. That wasn't me, you know. So I told her I'd go see the counselor, and I lied. You know, I knew I was going to lie. And they asked me all these questions, you know, how much did you drink, what drugs do you do, all blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, man, this chick is whack. But, you know, I drank every other weekend, and I tried pot 3 or 4 times, and, you know, and never did cocaine. Never, never. I wouldn't touch that stuff. Yeah, right. And so what ended up happening is my mom called up Jack, because that was the only number she knew from the program. Or she knew that he would be a good man. And this is how screwed up I was. I saw this guy pulling up from my driveway. If you know who he is, I go, this old man, what does he know? You know? I mean, I'm young. What? You know? First thing he goes, ah, you've been flirting with the devil. And I'm like, you know. Yeah. And I went to Saturday Night Live, this group, when it was over in the old room. And the first thing I saw, and I saw everybody hugging, and that tripped me out. I mean, two guys hugging, yeah, right. I mean, I really, that's how shallow and how, you know. But I tell you one thing, I stayed for the meeting. I don't remember what was said or who was there or what went on, but all I know is when I left that meeting, I felt good. Something happened. The seed was planted, you know. I heard something. So I did a lot of geographics, and I moved away. I tried living with my father, who I never grew up with the guy. He'd go to work during the day, you know, and I'd wake up. He'd come home, I'd go to sleep. I didn't want to be with him, you know. I didn't trust this man. I didn't, you know. Thank God for the program, because that relationship is now cleaned up and we're friends. But what happened was I wasn't going to meet. I maybe went to 7 meetings or something like that. And I managed to get about 107 days clean by myself, because I wasn't, where drugs and alcohol left me is I wasn't that most outgoing guy. I wouldn't go, hey, what's up, you know, let's go drink. That wasn't me. You know, I was real shut down, except for when I had drugs and alcohol, then I could talk, you know. But what happened was is I'd convinced my mother that, you know, I'm fine, I'm cured, and I'm ready to come home, and I'll do this AA thing, I don't know, once a week or once a month or something. I somehow convinced her. And I came home, and I hooked up with my old running partners. And one guy goes, yeah, have a beer. I go, yeah, all right, one beer, you know. And next thing you know, I was on a 3-month run. And what happened in that 3-month run is I managed to wipe out everything that mattered to me, everything that I cared about. Everybody that I loved did not want me around. My family did not like me. My mom, she loved me, but she let me go. You know, my sister, my oldest sister, she didn't want to even speak to me. I was like, you know, look at my little younger brother, the loser. He's doing drugs, didn't graduate high school, you know, hurts everybody in the family. I was a black sheep. And what happened was I had a spiritual experience, and November 24th, 1988 is my first day of sobriety. And it was a trip. You know, I was loaded on a lot of things. I was drunk. I was on drugs. And I went up to my room. And it's very hard for me to explain what that spiritual experience was. But the best I can put it, and it even has it in the book, all my old ideas were like totally casted, were cast out, you know, and a brand new set of new ones were in. And what happened for me is I woke up. You know, I had enough AA, I went to enough meetings, because if you're new and this is your first time here, you're screwed. You're drinking screwed. I mean, we're in, you know, the seed's planted and, you know, and it's great, I'm telling you. You know, if I had it, I wish I could have stayed the first time, but I didn't. I had to go and, you know, that was my story. I had to go out. But what happened was I woke up and I knew that I had a drinking and drug problem. And, you know, that's when I went and got help. And I tell you what, these last 5 years, in November I'll be coming up on 6, these last 5 and a half years have been the best of my life. I was 18, I was young, and at first it was like oh, Jesus, I'm so young, you know. And that was my own thinking. You know, I was talking to my boss today, and we were talking about how much I didn't have to experience, and how much I could use the old-timers, the long-timers, or whoever has a story longer than mine, or whatever, they did more, I can use that and go, look what I don't have to do, you know. Thank God that I got sober at the age I did, because the doctor told my mother when I went to rehab that at the age of 21 I would be dead. And that's scary, you know, that's really scary, because, you know, this is a progressive disease. If I were to go out, you know what, I'd be running hard. But I, you know what, today I know that I don't have to go out. I don't have to drink again today, you know. That's when the first thing that I heard when I really started to listen, you know, I heard the real simple things like, don't take the first drink, you won't get drunk, you know. And that's all it started with. It started with me just going to meetings, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days. I just kept going to meetings and meetings and meetings. You know, I didn't jump into the steps right away. That shit scared me, you know, especially that four step, you know. I mean, I was not going to tell anybody what I did, you know. Now I'm practically telling everybody, hey, dude, you know. What happened for me is I finally got enough pain in sobriety that, you know, it was either drink or work the steps, find some kind of spiritual solution. And that's when I hooked up with Dan over here, and God bless him. God bless him, because he's the first man and the only man that I've told everything to. You know what? He didn't laugh at me. He didn't beat me up. He didn't, you know, he didn't do any of that. What I thought, you know, my head needed a lot of cleaning. I'm still, to this day, you know, I'm still working on that. But what happened for me is that's where I found the spiritual part of this program. And that's what I try to do every day on a daily thing. Tap into God. And that's what one of the most beautiful gifts, if I've got the most powerful gift that I got, is I got a higher power that can help me with everything. All my problems. Not just the drink. Not just the drink. Because life happens, you know, and it's hard. And jobs, relationships, everything. And you know what? If I didn't have God, I would be gone. Because you know what? I know how to fix real well. I know how to fill up that hole. You know what? Instead of the drugs now, it's all about God, and it's all about the steps, and it's all about helping somebody else out a little bit more myself. And I've learned that through trial and error. Sometimes I'm not the best person. Sometimes I make mistakes. Sometimes I hurt people. But you know what? I learn from them. You know, and I'm not as hard on myself anymore, you know. And that's a beautiful thing about this program, you know. I mean, it trips me out how good it gets. You know, if this was boring, if this sucked, and if, I mean, I would not be here, you know. I would not be here, 24 years old. No. I'd be gone. You know what, I think about, you know, all the friends that call me up all the time. You know, I had friends out there, and there was like a handful of us that were really close at the time, and that's what they gave me. But you know what? They weren't. I couldn't go up and go, dude, I'm hurting. I feel less than or whatever. You know, I couldn't do that with them. I could not do it with them. I'd be in pain and hide it in front and be Mr. Tough, Mr. Cool, Mr. Whatever you want to be. I would be it. And you know what? Today, my friends, you know what? I'm honest. There's a handful of guys in my life. You know, they're in the front row right now. You know, a few in the back and over here. I mean, there's a lot. I swear, and I could sit down and tell them everything that's going on with me, and it's safe. You know, I trust them. I never found that out there. You know what I'm saying? I never found that. You know, they talk about unique and priceless friendships that we make. And I'm going to read in closing a page that just blows me away every time I hear it. You know, the meetings I go to, they talk about the book, The Power of the People. If I don't have all three of those in my life, you know, I mean, I can't just concentrate on the book, not go to meetings and not pray. You know, I can't just hang out with friends and shoot the shit and, you know, in meetings. I know where that got me. It got me to being really uncomfortable because everybody's, you know, finding out how they do it. And when I apply all three of those in my life, it's going on. It's great. You know what? I mean, I can help people. It's great. So, I'm going to read this little part. Do you got a book here? It's Keys to the Kingdom. It kind of sums it up real quick. And like I said, thank you for letting me speak tonight. The last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But I have also known a great deal of joy and peace that is the handmaiden of our inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, as unusual quality of fellowship, for to these people I'm truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and a newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There's no more aloneness, and that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never need return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys to the kingdom. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Dan Richards. I'm an alcoholic from Campbell. That's okay. I love Campbell. I got sober in Campbell at the old SNL. It's very good to be here tonight. I'd like to thank my opening speaker. Did a great job. Give him a round of applause. Tough act to follow, but we'll see what happens. I guess I'll share with you guys what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I come from a family that had a lot of alcoholism in it, and you're looking at all of it. Me? Bobby talked about being the black sheep of his family, and I relate. Looking back, I don't think that I was ever comfortable in my own skin. Ever. A few years ago, I was at my mom's house, and you know how parents save stuff from when you're a kid, from school, papers and homework and stuff like that? And she brought all this stuff. She was going through all this stuff, and I was looking at it, and it was a trip what I saw. And when I looked at that stuff, like the little notes from the teacher, like stuff said stuff like this: Daniel is an excellent student if he would only quit hitting and kicking the other children. If he would only pay attention, if he would only sit still, if only. And all I can tell you is that I couldn't keep my hands to myself. I couldn't sit still. And there's some people in the room that are going to relate to this. I am not stupid, and I never have been. And even when I was a kid, my dad or my mom would tell me, don't do that. And for some reason, I knew I shouldn't do it. I'm not supposed to do this. If I do it, I'm going to get in trouble. And I had to do it. I had to do it. And I got in trouble. And I remember, at an early age, people were talking about me and what was going on in my life. And this was the big word in my life. People didn't really understand. He has so much potential. He has so much potential. But underneath that, even young, I heard what they were really saying. He has a lot of potential, but what the fuck is he doing? He's messed up. Something's wrong with him. And I was pretty much in agreement with that. I felt like something was wrong with me. I'm not going to get into a big, long story about my childhood. It's not really necessary. I have an older brother and a younger sister. Grew up in the same family as me. Neither one of them are alcoholic. I have the crazy star chromosome. It's me. My dad didn't make me drink, but for years I thought he did. My friend Fred over here, I remember him saying one time, you're only as honest as the information that you have. And I related to that because there was a time, people would tell me, man, you drink a lot, or you're an alcoholic, and I'd tell them, if you had a dad like mine, you'd drink too. I really thought I was alcoholic because of my dad and the way he treated me and how hard he was on me. I really believe that was the truth. I know that it's not the truth today. My dad died about almost 11 years ago, and I drank more. after he was gone. Anyway, what happened for me is this. I grew up in a little neighborhood in East San Jose, and drugs and alcohol was no big secret where I grew up. It was very prevalent. A lot of people were doing it. A lot of people were doing it to survive where I grew up. That's just how it was. And one of my little buddies, older brother, we went over his house, and he was drinking vodka. And I was 13 years old, and they passed me the bottle. And I drank two-thirds of a fifth of vodka out of the bottle at 13. And it was great. The only time it was great. God damn it. It was great. It was wonderful. I didn't even know how tore up I was inside until that vodka hit bottom and all that shit went away. Man, it did something great for me, you know? It was like, whew, you know? I can breathe, man. I can talk. I can relate to you. I'm funny. I'm cool. I'm brave. I'm strong. I'm throwing up now, but you know. And I didn't realize it, but what I did is because I'm alcoholic. Everything I've learned about alcoholism, I learned here, you know. But I made an unconscious decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of alcohol. That's what I did. And I devoted a lot of time and energy at a very young age to doing that. And I guess since we have some time, you know, I'll get into some of the detail of what it was like for me and you know, how twisted I got behind that. I mean, out of the gate. Here's a story. I've never heard anybody else share anything like this. This is my trip. I had a paper route. I've always had the gift of gab, salesman type personality. Always had that. And I had a pretty nice little paper route. And, you know, I'd been getting loaded for a couple years. You know, my partners turned me on to weed, smoke weed and drink whenever we could. And I went out collecting on this route, and I had a couple $100. And this is, 18 years ago? It was a lot of money back then. And this thought occurs to me as I'm riding my bicycle. Wow, you could get a lot of, you could get a big bag of weed and a bunch of booze. And I don't think I voiced it, but I felt it in some friends with this money. You could have some companion. You can belong. You can feel good for a while, you know? I mean, so what I did is, the rub was, is how do I explain not having this money? So what I did is I rode my bike into a field. I stashed the money under a rock and punched myself in the face. Fat lip, black eye. You know, because I grew up in a rough neighborhood, and it wasn't a far reach to say that somebody knew I had money and rolled me. And they believed me. And check this out. The other, probably the sicker half of that story is it was worth it. It was worth it to me. I didn't see anything wrong with that. As a matter of fact, if I thought I could have got away with it again, if I thought I could have done that every month and got away with it, I'd have been socking myself up all the time, you know? That's what it was like for me. You know what I mean? And sometimes I still try to glorify it. It's part of my disease. You know, the book talks about we forget about the pain and suffering and humiliation of a few short weeks or months ago. And, you know, and it's so true. There's still times that I try to glorify it in my mind that it was all that. You know, it was cool. It was fun. And from the beginning, you know, like I said, that first time, and the other people didn't really think I was cool. I really threw up in their house, you know. And drank two-thirds of a fifth of vodka out of the bottle, you know. It wasn't all that cool. I don't know why my mind is like that, tries to glorify it. I was watching this TV program. I had a couple years sober, and there was this commercial for, like, Inglenook wine or some shit like that. And there's this couple walking, strolling down the beach, and they got this bottle of wine, and she's kind of trailing the glass in her fingers. Looks so cool, you know what I mean? And the sun's setting, and the birds are flying, and this is a thought that goes through my mind. Fuck, I miss that. God, I miss that. And then the sanity part of the program kicked in, and then I remembered, I never did that. I never did that. I went to the beach with a case of beer, a bottle of Jack Daniels, and fell in the fire. That's what I did. So, you know, cunning, baffling, and powerful. It lies. It lies to me. It has lied to me my whole life. You know, just some of the stuff that's happened. If you're new, you know, maybe you can relate to this. You know it's Thanksgiving. You know your whole family's going to be there. And you know that you need to be there. I mean, here I come. You know, show up wasted. Wasted. Just, you know, the word is shit-faced is the word. That's what we used to call it. You know? Just pie-eyed. I just couldn't, it's staggering. But still have the clarity to see that different look, and each family member had a different look on their face. And my sister thought it was funny, my brother was disgusted, my mom is hurt, my dad's gonna kill me. You know? I've been there, I've done that. And have my dad take me in the backyard and say, man, what's wrong with you? Why do you do this to your mother? Why do you do this to us? And all I could say is, I don't know. And check it out, at least I wasn't lying. At least I wasn't lying, because I didn't know. It didn't make any sense to me. You know, I've done a lot of crazy stuff. And lived. It's amazing. There was a God in my life back then. I don't think that God loves me any more now that I'm sober than he did when I was drunk. I think he had my back probably more then than now. You know, I take care of myself a little bit better now. I don't know how many of you can relate to this. Have you ever been like drunk and then you like pass out and you're sleeping and then something, some buddy or some noise or some irritating thing will like wake you up? Here's an experience I had. I'm on a straight nod. I'm out. I'm cool, you know. And there's this irritating frickin' noise that starts bugging me in the back of my consciousness. And it kind of sounds like this. Right? And it gets louder. I'm like... And I wake up. I'm mad. Because what is this waking me up, right? And it's me grinding on the guardrail at 60 miles an hour in my car. Sparks. Woo, baby. Woo. You know, just on a straight. No seat belt, no insurance, no registration, no nothing. A wing and a prayer, man. Not even a prayer, you know. Just winging it. I didn't even pull over. I just went, oh shit, and then looked at my rear view to see who saw me do that, you know. I'm cool. And you know, and parked the car just big as shit right in front of my parents' house, you know. In a blackout. Total blackout. And then, you know, come to the next morning and have my dad say, what happened to your car? And I'm like, what? You know. And so how many of you can relate to this? You get to the point where you're afraid to look at your car in the morning. You been there? Is it home? Is it my car? Is it in one piece? You know, that's what happened. You're scared of shit like that. What did I do last night? And, you know, like Bobby, I mixed a lot of pills, powders, and potions with my alcohol to try to control and enjoy my drinking. And it didn't work. You know, I've done stuff like, I remember one night I took a bunch of Valium, 10 milligram Valiums, you know, the little blue ones, and drank a bunch of tequila. And went to Gilbert Zaff's with my girlfriend, and she made the mistake of talking to some guy. And I was in a blackout, and next thing I know, I came to, and I was choking her to death. I didn't want to choke her to death. I loved her. And thank God I came to in time to let go, and she went and kept breathing. You know, and so then you're sober because, you know, you try to stay sober for a few days because you just fucked up so bad. You know what I mean? And then you got to walk around wanting to drink, hungover, tore up, and you got to look at those marks on her throat for 10 days. Oh, fuck. Okay? That's where I come from. That's how glamorous it was for me. You know? I don't know. You know, somewhere along the line I lost my hustle with it, you know? I used to be able to work other people and other little... Well, where it ended up for me is I lost all that and I had to prey on the people that loved me and trusted me. Anybody relate to that? I know what it's like to creep in my dad's room while he's sleeping and pick money out of his wallet. Been there, done that. Steal from my little sister. You know? And it takes a long time to live that shit down on the program. If you're new and you're struggling with that stuff, God bless you, man. Stick around. I mean, you really haven't, the way I see it, I had no choice but to stick around. Because I knew if I didn't, it was just going to be more of the same. You know, more shit to live with like that. You know, I don't know when and where it happened. I used to be a happy drunk, and it used to be fun, and I used to be funny. I used to get positive feedback. You know, you are a blast, bro. You're so funny. You know, and somewhere along the line, I got violent, and it was really ugly. You know, I can remember my friends. I stayed out partying all night long. Got in a fight with somebody. I don't even really remember the whole scenario. I know it was in Santa Cruz, and I know it was dude's house, but I still didn't like him. And got in this big fight with him and all his people, and came home all clothes torn and blood on me. And you know, and here's my mom looking out the window, and I'm waving, my shirt sleeves hanging down to this rift, and I'm bye to my friends. You know what I mean? Blood all over me. And I come inside, you know, and my mom wants to talk to me. Oh, yeah, you know. And I'm still drunk. I'm not just, you know, I'm still drunk. So I sit on the couch. Now she's going to tell me about how I'm living. And I don't want to hear it. It hurts too much, you know what I mean? But I don't have any skills. Okay? I don't know how to talk anymore. I don't know. Somewhere along the line, shit's made me an animal now. And I don't know how that happens, but it happened to me. And I tried to tell her, look, leave me alone, and she wouldn't do it, you know? Because she knew I was going to die, is why. She loved me. For some strange reason I can't explain, I'm my mom's favorite. Go figure. I don't know why. So what I do is I slam my head through the wall and tell her, leave me the fuck alone. I mean, she looks at me like I'm some kind of a freak. My mom. I mean, I've seen other people look at me like I'm a freak a lot, you know. Who cares? But my mom. I'll never forget that. I hope I never forget that. And then the remorse you feel when you're like patching the drywall, you know. And you guys know what that's like. You lose your temper and now you fist through the door. You know, I lived in those houses. You know, six holes in the wall and the door's punched in and the door jams kicked down and all that shit, man. I've only been to jail once since I've been sober, and it was just to clear up wreckage. I haven't hurt anybody physically. I haven't punched anybody. I haven't done none of that stuff. By the grace of God and His program. So I guess, you know, that's probably enough of what it was like. I mean, if you can't relate to that, maybe you're in the wrong room. I don't know. I guess the other thing that I really need to say is that, you know, the try to control and enjoy part. I worked at that really, really hard to try to control and enjoy my drinking. And here's my experience. If I was controlling it, I wasn't enjoying it. And if I was enjoying it, you can count on the fact that I wasn't controlling it. You know, I was doing as much as I could. And I played all kinds of games in my mind. Like, here's one that I used to use. I knew that I wasn't supposed to drink. I knew, you know what I mean? People told me I knew. But does it count if nobody knows I'm drinking? I used to do that one. Or I used to do shit like, you know, just don't drink. Here's what I don't know if anybody else would do this one. I figured I shouldn't drink anything that has a man's name in the label, like Jack Daniels or, you know, Jose Cuervo or Jim Beam. You know what I mean? I get hammered on some Jose Cuervo, and the next thing you know, dude's whispering in my ear,
"He's looking at your old lady, man."
You know? It's on. You know? And I tried that one, you know, and it didn't work either. And then you try just drink beer, you know, and like just so bloated, you know, because you're drinking like 87 beers a day, you know, and you know what I mean? It's just a trip. And you know, I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but I would personally like to give a little thanks and tribute to cocaine for getting me here about 10 years sooner than I think I would have otherwise. So that's how it happened for me. So that's what it was like. And then this is what happened. This is how I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to this bar on the east side called the Drying Shed. When we came to Toyon. Some of y'all been there, done that? Which was one of the nicer establishments that I went to, really. Because my criterion was, if you couldn't smell piss from the front door, it's not for me. But this was a nice, pretty nice bar. They served brunch, you know, people had jobs, you know. Anyway, there's baseball playoffs, and it's happy hour. They got this deal going, and this is how they did their happy hour. They had these tumblers, and you buy one, and they bring you two. Boom. Fucking great. You know what I mean? So I had about 16 of them in about an hour and a half, you know, and I figured I got a little buzz on. And I literally come tumbling out the front door with my friends because we're wrestling, you know what I mean, and falling down. And I get up and I look across the street and there's a county sheriff. And I think, that's all right. You know? And because I was cool. Hey, I'm maintaining. That was a big deal when I was doing it. You got to maintain, dude. Maintain. You know, you can do whatever you want to do as long as you can maintain. So, hey, I figure I'm cool. I'm not hammered. I just got a buzz. I just got a buzz on, you know. So I get in this, not my van, I almost said my van, it was my girlfriend's van. I didn't have any cars. I didn't even have a checking account till I got sober. Okay? To tell the truth here. And I'm driving home, and this cop pulls me over for weaving in my own lane. Oh, please. Can't you wait till I'm weaving in somebody else's lane, you know? Come on, give me a break. So dude pulls me over, he's giving me the sobriety, the roadside test, and I do one leg pretty good. I'm having trouble with the other leg. My partner leans out the window and yells in this hammered voice, "She's got a bad leg!" And then, you know... And dude was trying to help me, really. He really was, you know. And this is what the cop says to me. Turn around. Place your hands behind your back, you know. You going downtown, son. And it just started to be a big deal about, I think this was like in 1983 or 1984. And it just started this Mothers Against Drunk Driving thing, you know, which, God, that used to piss me off. You know, those people, man. I remember I used to say, man, if it wasn't for drunks, most of them women wouldn't be mothers, you know, but whatever. So anyway, outside issue there, I'm sorry. Anyway. Maybe I need to write again. Anyway, so I got to do that court trip, and back then it was like $1,000. I don't know, somebody was telling me it's like $2,500 now if you get a first-time offense. You lose your license for 6 months. Wow. I had to do 10 days and pay like $1,000. And so anyway, they made me this deal. You go to some AA meetings, and then you only have to do like 2 weekends or 3 weekends. I think that was the deal he gave me. And I said, sure. You know, I mean, I'd rather do a lot of stuff than go to jail, you know what I mean? And I didn't really know anything about AA, but it sounded better than jail. You get to leave, you know. And check this out, 7.5 years later, it still sounds better to me here than jail, you know. One of the reasons I keep coming back. So anyway, I got introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, to fulfill my obligation. And I didn't really want to get sober. I just wanted to beat that case, you know, to beat that time. Just slide. You know, that was my big goal in life. Just let me just slide on by here, you know what I mean? You know, get one more buzz and not get popped. That's about as far in the future as I looked, you know? And I went to Alano East. And they had these steps hanging on these little old plaques. Somebody told me survived this fire or some big deal. Yeah, so what? And I didn't get it. I'm like, how can anything that can hang on a freaking wall change my life? I mean, I got problems here, folks. I don't know what you people are doing. I saw all the differences. Everybody's old. Everybody likes to drink coffee. I mean, coffee. Let's do some coke. I just didn't get it. Then I got my little card signed. I came as late as I could. I didn't introduce myself. I got my card signed, and I got the fuck out of there. Because those people freaked me out. Okay, it was just some vibe they had. Some fucking glow in their eyes or something. I don't know, man. I didn't dig it. And I went home, and I lied to my girlfriend. Because she really didn't want me to, you know, she didn't like that choking part, you know. She was really hoping I wouldn't drink anymore, you know. And I lied. And I said, she said, how was it? I said, it was pretty good. Well, what did they say? They said, well, if you feel like drinking, go to a meeting. It was total bullshit. And what happened is I fulfilled that little obligation, and I started getting loaded again. Well, I never really stopped, you know, but I just really got back into it. And I really got into using other chemicals and stuff. 3 or 4 years were not fun. And I didn't like it. And I didn't want to do it anymore. It got to the point where my idea of a hot Friday night was to go to Mr. Happy's check cashing and cash my little paycheck and buy a bottle of booze and get drunk and go to the Connections house and spend the rest of my paycheck and then hole up in this bathroom at this place we called Hell House and do dope all night and watch the doorknob because I thought they were turning it real fucking slow. You know? And play curtain patrol and all that other shit. You know? And then run out of dope, and then like borrow $20 off one of your bros, you know, your bros, so I could buy another bottle of booze, so I could fall out, and maybe have enough gas money to get to work Monday and start this shit all over again. And like Bobby said, my family didn't want nothing to do with me anymore. I was ugly. You couldn't talk to me. You didn't know what I was gonna do. They didn't want me around anymore. And by some weird stroke of luck, I ended up with this job. I was an electrician with the county. I got this job. My mom worked for the county. She got me in, is what happened, you know. And I had a pretty good job, and they were firing me. And it's hard to get fired from a county job, folks. Have you ever had one? You know what I mean? I mean, OJ'd still be working there. Really, right? And they were firing me. I literally had a printout sheet, an absentee sheet that would hit the floor. A printout. They kept records. Anal retentive bastards kept records of all that stuff. You know, I had no idea they were keeping all that shit written down. I think for the last like year of it, they were just keeping me there to see what my next excuse would be why I didn't come to work, you know? I mean, there was like it was easy for me because I didn't have to talk to a person. You call in early, you leave a message on a machine. You know, I'm sick, I got the flu, the dog had two-headed puppies and I'm waiting for National Enquirer. Whatever, you know? I mean, on and on, you know? And the guy even told me, look, man, all five of your grandmothers died, you know? How many times do you use that one, you know? One time I called, I was up partying in Santa Cruz over the hill, and I didn't make it home. I knew I can't go to work like this, you know, fucking pupils dilated in hell, freaking, you know, this ain't happening. So I called from the beach, and they got the seagulls and the waves on the answering machine, you know? Fuck, I'm through. And check this out. I know that, and besides all that other outside stuff going on, check out what else was happening. I was fucking tired. I was really, really, really tired inside. And here's a message that I want to carry to whoever's new in the room. Because this is what it was like to me. It takes a lot of work to stay out there and get loaded. because you got to lie and you got to remember your lies and you got to maintain your lies, and then you got to get high, so you got to steal and you got to watch your back, right, and keep up all your lies, and then you got to cultivate like friends and kiss dealers' asses. I hate drug dealers, you know, and then you got to what else you got to do? You got to maintain your fronts. You got to keep all that rolling, pay off your fronts and your bar tabs with the check you ain't got yet. You know what I mean? God, you got to do all that shit. And if you're new, let me tell you this. If you can do all that shit, you got it, you can do this. If you can do all that, you can do this. Much easier. So this is what happened to me, man. All this shit came down. Nothing new. Just more of the same old shit, but a lot of it all at the same time. And meanwhile, I'm really tired inside now, and I'm hating my life. It's like this. I guess women do when they're putting makeup on. But like my deal was, when I shave, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I couldn't look in my eyes. Hated my life. Get wired up on whatever it was I was getting wired up, and lay in bed like this, thinking about all the people I burned and the shit I did. And oh God, that's horrible. God. And I just couldn't drink enough fast enough anymore, you know. Just shit wasn't going away no more. And, fuck. And I came home from work. Not after work. I was still on the clock. I left my job to come home to do some, to get loaded. Because I would, like, play these games, like, leave the dope at home, you know. And then I'd be at work and I'd go, damn, come home. And I'd go home. So I go home, and here's this note on my bed. And it was this girl I really loved, you know. And she was my running partner. And she said, hey, look, man, I love you, and I hope you do well, and blah, blah, blah. I'm out of here. And it's not the first time I ever heard that, either. But what I'm saying is, like, it was like a spiritual thing. All this shit came down, boom, at the same time. And I just don't feel hip, slick, and cool anymore. I'm hurting now. I'm tired. I don't know. I don't have too many more bright ideas. I shot most of my angles already, you know. And this is what happened to me. I started to cry. And I probably hadn't cried since I was a kid. Because I learned not to do that. Whew. And nobody was home, but I closed my bedroom door anyway. And I got on my knees and I said the most honest prayer I have ever said in my life, up to and including this day. And here's the prayer. Please, God, help me. And it was almost like an out-of-body experience, like I was watching myself do this and say this from a distance, because I hated God. Where's this shit coming from? And there's a line in the book where it says, you know, deep down in every human being is a fundamental concept of God, maybe obscured by pomp, circumstance, or, you know, worship of other things or whatever. You know, that's my story. That's what happened to me. You know, Bobby shared about being so afraid to share his inventory and not being able to tell another man all this stuff. And I know from him being in my life and us talking, I know the reason why he was able to ask me to be his sponsor. And it was because of the stuff that I did acting out because of how much I hated God. And this is what I shared at this one meeting when he knew that he wanted me as his sponsor. I'm going to tell him how sick you are too, okay? This is how tore up I was inside, okay? I blamed all this shit on my dad and on God, if there is a God. If not, who cares anyway? But anyway, I was doing this like black magic Satanism shit, okay? Because I thought it was cool. And I would spite God and I'd get wired and, you know, tell all these roomfuls of people there was no God. And I drove all the way to Gilroy. And I bought 4 rabbits, and I killed them with my bare hands, and I won't tell you how because it's really gross and there's women in the room, and I took my buck knife that I wore on my belt 24/7, and I gutted them, and I drove by the Catholic church in my neighborhood, threw 2 of them on the front steps of the church, and 2 of them in the schoolyard. That's where I come from. That's how I felt about God. Whew. And I don't say that to gross you out or to Here's why I'm telling you this, is because I didn't have a relationship with God. I want you to understand that, any kind of working relationship. And then all this shit comes down, and this is what comes out of me, you know, please God help me. Whew. And this is what happened to me. This voice comes in my head, and I know, it sounded like my voice, my thoughts, but I know it wasn't me, because I don't think like this. And this is what it says. Go to AA, Dan, you'll be okay. And the feeling that went through my body with the words, you'll be okay, it rocked me. And you know what the feeling was? It was the exact same freaking feeling I had when I was 13 and the fucking vodka hit bottom. The same feeling. What a trip. It's this warm, I'm okay. It's going to be okay. What a trip, man. Whew. I haven't shared that in a long time. So anyway, I started going to meetings for real. And this is in early 1987. And I want to let you know, if you're new, this is just my story. You don't have to do it this way. For the first month, month and a half, I was on a marijuana maintenance program. Okay, that's how I did it. I didn't know how to do anything right. I mean, it was like, I was so fucking proud of myself. I wasn't drinking. It's okay if I'm just smoking dope. That's cool. That's how I felt. But anyway, I started to go to meetings, and I sat in the back of the room, and I know that there's at least one other man in the world that felt like I did, because I've heard him share it. I could not relax, pay attention, or hear what was going on in the meeting until I had scanned the room and made sure that there was no man in there that was any kind of a physical threat if I had a plan to take care of him. Okay? Because that's how full of fear I was. And that's what low self-esteem I had when I got here. And I was at a meeting at Alano East, and I heard a guy they called Holy Joe talk. Joe Beltran. And he told my story. And something happened to me, and I thought, man, I belong here. I can have this thing too. And what I think is so spiritual about that, I've heard Joe talk several times since, and he didn't ever tell my story again. But that day, he told my story. You know, I related to just about everything he said. And he speaks very powerfully anyway. And man, it just, boom, it just broke down all these walls and shit. And I, you know, wow. And, fuck, I don't know, man. I just made a decision. I don't know. They talk about the grace of God. I think that was it for me. At that point, I thought, I'll try it. And, you know, I don't have time to tell you guys all the circumstances of how that happened for me, you know. I didn't know how to ask a man for help. You know, Bobby talked about it. We weren't able to do that or share that with men. I didn't know how to do that stuff. I put my name in a box. The sponsor I got saw me getting loaded at the cabaret about a month before I got sober. He knew exactly how I was. There's no chance of me bullshitting him about who I was and how I was. And he introduced me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. No bullshit. And I don't know, man, the weirdest thing happened. I fell in love with this goddamn thing. From the gate. I'm so fortunate, you know. And he had me hammering those steps down before. I didn't even really know what the hell they were. And check it out. It doesn't really matter. Just do them. Because it's not my brilliance that keeps me sober. It's not my complete and total understanding of what all that shit means. Or how that works, or all that psychobabble bullshit. Don't matter. I did it. I just did it. A man named Chuck Brissett put it to me like this. He said, there's spiritual laws. He said, it's like this. It's like gravity. You don't even have to believe in it. It'll still work. He says, get up on the building and say, I don't believe in gravity. I don't believe in gravity. Whether you believe in a shit or not. And I understood. You know, people took the time with me to explain it to me like that so I could get it. And my sponsor didn't let me cruise. He didn't let me hang around here till I got my, I've seen it happen. And he got me, now I got my shit together. I got an old lady. I got a ride. I got me a little crib with a stereo and fuck the meetings. I've had friends do that and die. And I didn't get to do that. An old timer told me, I was complaining about, you know, I'm doing everything right and life's hard. He says, well, that's good, Dan. I said, why is that good? He says, because if you're coasting too long, you're going downhill. What you think? You got to pay your dues, man. And see, I understood that. Pay your dues. I go, oh, okay, I know what that is. And I just got involved. I was carrying alcoholics to the message before I had a message to carry to the alcoholic. And what I mean by that is I gave rides. If somebody got up and shared that they needed a ride at the meeting, I was, he's mine. You know, after the Lord's Prayer, I'm elbowing people out of the way. It's a selfish program, God damn it. You know, I'm giving that dude a ride home. I go to a recovery house, Benny McEwen's, and, you know, load up the truck. Come on, we're going to a meeting, you know, just shit like that. And I made it. And I didn't drink. You know? And I learned this about today. I just don't drink today. I might drink tomorrow. I just don't drink today. And every time I check the clock, it's today. I'm cool. You know, I just don't drink today. They told me stuff like, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. See, I never knew that. I thought it was the 15th. Okay? I'm getting a buzz. Now I'm drunk, you know. No, they said it's like this. If you get hit by a train, it's not the caboose that kills you. That's what they told me. And I don't hear that too much anymore, but that's what I heard. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days or we'll gladly refund your misery. I remember hearing that. And it pissed me off that they knew I was miserable. And I didn't want them to know that about me anymore, so I was going to come and get my issue. I'm getting mine. You know? And I wanted to get through them fucking steps so I could coast again, you know? And it just didn't happen that way for me. But I've been very, very blessed. I mean, it's incredible. Sometimes I don't even believe it. A lot of times I don't believe it. How good it is for me today. The quality of life that I have today. The home that I live in. There's no dog shit on the floor. There's no holes in the wall. There's food in the fridge. There's electricity. The PG&E's on. I'm not getting them ones with the red ones. You know how I used to handle all them bills and shit? This is how I handled them. I put them in a drawer, and when the drawer got full, dump them and start over. And that's how I dealt with all that shit. Not even, I pay my bills. I have a roommate, we have differences, we sit down and talk. We've never yelled at each other, never threatened each other. No ultimatums, no, never. Not one, wow. What a trip. There's a group of men in my life that are teaching me how to live. You know, one of my goals is to have a relationship with a woman. I'm not talking sexually here now, folks. I'm talking about communication and trust and intimacy and compassion and understanding. I want a relationship with a woman like I have with about 10 guys that I have in my life. Why can't I do it with men? Why is it? This is just me and what areas I need to grow in and where I'm at. I'm not by any means perfect. Why is it that one of my friends can call me and say, "Hey, dude, I ran out of gas, you know, at 11 at night. Can you come get me?" "Oh, no problem, bro." Boom, I'm on it. I'm up, right? But if my girlfriend would have done that, I would call her a dumb bitch. Why? Why? I don't know. But I do know that I don't want to do that anymore. I remember being in a meeting and hearing a man share this, and I related so much. He said, "I think if I ever get to heaven, it'll be by backing away from hell." It's like I don't always know what I wanted, what I'm supposed to do, or what the right thing is. But through this new awareness I have inside and the people around me in my life, I'm pretty conscious of what it is that doesn't work anymore. And pretty open to doing things differently. My tolerance for pain is like a lot less than it used to be. You know, I can't hold my mud. I don't want to. You know, but even when I do want to, I just can't do it like I used to do it anymore. I gotta tell. I gotta tell somebody what's going on with me. I also want to put a little plug in and let everybody know that I did get sober in Saturday Night Live. I'll always love this group. But my home group is the other Wednesday night closed men's meeting at Coco's restaurant on Wednesday night. I think it's the finest meeting in the valley. That's right. In the past almost 4 years, I've missed it maybe half a dozen times. I'm there. People know me there. Long-term sobriety in that room. There's people in that room that keep me and keep the group straight. Risk their friendship with me to tell me the truth. What an awesome deal. It's the only place in the world that I've ever known, ever been a part of, where they would tolerate me at my worst, but always encourage me to be my best. And what a trip. What a trip. Never had anything like this. You know. I think the deal is, you know, I got to say that not all of the information that I got here was new to me. You know, from the time I was young, they were telling me to do the right thing and don't hang out with those people and don't smoke that shit and don't steal and keep your hands yourself. Blah, 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 blah. You know, don't drink. This is where I was stuck. None of those other people could ever tell me, what in the fuck do I do instead? What do I do? My friend Bob put it one time, I heard him share in a meeting. And he put it just so well that I hope I never, you know. He said, like, you know, because he had that experience with these counselors. And this is how, and it was so much how I felt. And they had my best interest at heart. But whenever they were sitting there behind their big ass desk or whatever it was, or their badge or their robe or whatever it is they had, I always felt like they were talking down to me. And I was a piece of shit. And I don't know about you, but when I'm a piece of shit, I'm not hearing nothing. Nothing. And I just didn't get it. And it wasn't until another alcoholic sat down to me and said, I don't know what you're going to do, Dan. I don't know what you should. This is what I've done. This is what's happened for me. I'm self-employed today. I'm self-supporting through my own contributions today. I've eaten out of dumpsters. Okay, I know about that shit. That cheese is all right if you just get the mold off, you know. I've done that. I've been there. Why? Because I spent all my money on alcohol. And now I come down off my run and I'm hungry. And I'm too fucking proud to ask somebody for some money. What a trip, man, that I get to be here and do this with you people, you know? This is the best life I never wanted. You know? What a trip. You know, if you're new, I don't know, you know, there's... you see somebody and you feel so much for them when they're new, fuck, you just want to crack them open and just give them some stuff, you know what I mean? And it don't happen that way, you know? But if you stick around here, I guarantee you somebody's going to love you a little bit. I guarantee you, man. You know, my sponsor told me, he said, you got to stay around because someday somebody's going to come in the room and they're going to be looking for you. Not Jack Holt, not Al Easthouse, not me. You. Your story, your experience, your strength, your hope. You. And it's happened for me. It's happened for me. And the guys that I sponsor keep me clean and sober. No doubt about it. You know, and the meeting's over and I don't want to end it like a sales pitch. You know what I mean? But God, you just... Fuck, I didn't ever have a life. You know, there's this line on page 63 in the book that says, we were reborn. I feel that so much. I didn't get my fucked up old tore up life back. I was reborn into the Spirit, into a brand new deal, man. I mean, that was one of the best things about it, was I didn't really have to trip so much on all that stuff behind me, but just go forward. And then there's another line on page 132. It says, the most satisfactory years of our life lie ahead. And I believe in those things. I've never been let down by the book, by what it says in there. It's my own belligerent denial that's let me down. My own pride, my own ego. I'm just going to close by welcoming you to the meeting tonight, especially if you're new. You know, I want to welcome you. Stick around. You don't ever have to take nothing if you don't want to, one day at a time for the rest of your life. You don't have to. Check this out. You don't have to leave here tonight fucked up inside and hurting. You can share it with somebody. Here's something that dawned on me. This is how my God works for me, okay? And this blows me away. Why is it... This is such a cool deal. Pain shared is pain lessened. Joy shared is joy greatened. Wow, what a fucking deal. What a deal. You know, if you're hurting, share it with somebody. If you're on top of the world, share it with somebody. We get inspiration from both. I'd like to thank Dave for asking me to be here tonight. It's a really pleasure and an honor to be able to be here and to do this. And thank all of you for sitting here and listening to me. Good night and God bless.